Hello and welcome to Are You Well? In this week, I'd like to take our attention to milk. As you may have realized, if you have children who have lactose intolerance, obviously you would have paid attention to understanding the impact of milk and milk products and finding replacements for cow's milk with dairy alternatives to support with their digestion, to support with their allergies. But often the question that is asked is whether Ayurveda recommends milk or not. What we must understand is that at the time that Ayurveda was at its pinnacle, several thousands of years ago, and even several hundreds of years ago, we didn't have the same production line of foods. Most of the times, people would have had access to food which is local, which is available around them. Obviously, fresh produce, whether it is vegetables or dairy, would have been from their own neighborhood. In fact, there was no such thing as trading milk. It was more like a cow would have been part of the family, much like it's domesticated, and then it would provide excess milk after the calves have been fed. And that would be boiled and used, and then you no longer can store it because there were no refrigerators, that would have been then converted into milk products like cheese, like Indian cottage cheese, which some of you might know is paneer, or turned into yogurt or to buttermilk, or by churning the cream that is collected after boiling the milk, that would have been turned into butter, and the butter would have been then melted to make ghee. So hence why cow's products, particularly milk and its products, were considered very precious in ancient traditions in India, and it is still considered very precious today. But then often now we do face this problem of lactose intolerance or dairy intolerance in general. That's largely because of the shift in the species which produce milk. For instance, you know, cows are no longer just native, they are hybrid. And in fact, there are two types of cows, A1 and A2. Or in fact, you can divide all dairy milk into A1 type of milk and A2 type of milk. And A2 type of milk is less allergenic. In fact, if those who have very mild lactose intolerance, then they might not have the same adverse effects with A2 milk. And most of the pure breed of cows, or for that matter, goat's milk, sheep's milk, these are all A2 because they don't contain the protein that A1 milk contains. And it's often this particular protein, casein, which is present in A1 milk that also contributes to its inflammation and allergies because it's hyperallergenic. It has excess allergenic tendency. And if a child or an adult's gut health is not conducive to digesting, absorbing this, then that would result in allergies. But let's look at, okay, not the current situation of where we don't know where the milk comes from. Many times dairy milk, particularly in some countries, would have been mixture of different milks, like from buffalo, cow, and of course, you know, fortunately, in some countries, there are very strict regulations to declare what is dairy milk, what's the source, and its contents. But if we are not looking at milk from a very modern, contemporary, current perspective, but if we think of milk, dairy, as something which really provided huge amounts of nourishment because of its high protein content and also its fat content. Not only that, it has milk sugars, which is carbohydrates. It kind of made a very perfect liquid of food at some point in time. So if I go back to the Ayurvedic classics, you know, which is my main aim in this Ayurveda, is to introduce you to this ancient wisdom of Ayurveda, which is not just practiced only as tradition, but also documented and codified in Sanskrit as medical textbooks. So when I look at some of these textbooks, which are from the 7th century AD, some are even from 2nd century AD, what do they talk about milk? So let's look a little bit about the understanding of milk historically from an Ayurvedic perspective. Milk in Ayurveda, or Sanskrit, is called kshira. And any milk, meaning milk from buffaloes, cows, goats, sheep, camel even, what Ayurvedic classical textbooks from those times, they say, they improve the tissue quality, they nourish the tissues, and they help in relieving that kind of vata energy, which is neurological energy, they're vata pacifying. And in the sense, you know, it kind of has that calming effect. And also they relieve pitta, which is that kind of fiery, inflammatory, hot qualities. In the sense, you know, it is heavy, and also it's cooling, but it increases, because of its heaviness, the kapha, the dense earthy qualities, and therefore it is difficult to digest. So let's face the fact that even in the classics of Ayurveda, they said that milk is a wonderful food, but difficult to digest because of its dense, heavy qualities. So that's the key that we need to look at, is really why milk becomes difficult to digest. One is because of its quality. Secondly, also our own gastrointestinal system. I'm going to, you know, talk about why lactose intolerance, especially you don't notice it when the babies are still kind of, you know, or your children are still small, they were babies. But as they grow up, suddenly at the age of 5 or 6 or even 7, they develop this lactose intolerance. Why does it happen? What's gone wrong? Let's look at it in a while, but let's go back and see what Ayurveda says about milk. So in Ayurveda, they look at the qualities of milk as differing based on the source. For instance, cow's milk promotes longevity. It is considered as a rejuvenative, and it's good for the undernourished, and it also is hailed as an important food that can support in brain function or mental function. Clearly, you know, because of its protein content, its fat contents, and its sugar contents, it makes a good food to support energy conversion, better focus, better attention, brain function, and as well as giving a good support to the tissue system, especially when someone is growing. And Ayurveda then looks at what are the qualities of other milks, like buffalo's milk. Buffalo's milk is heavy in its nature, and it is good to kind of create that satiation if someone is very hungry all the time. And also it's sleep-inducing, and it is difficult to digest. In fact, I remember when I was growing up in India, going to a primary school in India, if any of the kids were kind of slightly sleepy in the class, not paying attention to, let's say, math or science, our teachers would say, "Did you have buffalo's milk this morning?" Meaning that, you know, buffalo's milk is very well known in certain traditions to be having this heavy, dense quality. I mean, it's a very good milk to increase weight, particularly in children who may be malnourished, but of course their digestion has to be good because it's difficult to digest as well. But it also improves sleep. For instance, I remember some older women who would say if an adult is not sleeping or even a child is not sleeping, to give a little bit of buffalo's milk, heat it up and then give it to them before going to bed. It has that kind of sedative effect. So it's just interesting, you know, I haven't come across buffalo's milk here in London myself personally, but I do know that in certain traditions, even today, like in some parts of India, you actually can request buffalo's milk or to be supplied on a daily basis, or cow's milk.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Now, what about other milks like goat's milk? Goat's milk is quite easily available today, like I'm sure, because of all the debate and doubts and discussions around the quality of cow's milk and many coming off cow's milk, there is the availability of other kinds of milk, and goat's milk happens to be one of that. Of course, you know, if you are used to a particular type of milk, it's not easy to develop a taste for goat's milk or sheep's milk particularly, although, you know, goat's cheese and sheep's cheese or different kinds of cheeses may be something that's very enticing and tasty. Milk itself may have a certain characteristic and you may not like it. But certainly I would say, if you can't get hold of A2 type of milk, cow's milk, and you still drink milk, then it is better to actually go for goat's milk or sheep's milk, because they are all A2 milk, which have less allergens. And goat's milk, even in Ayurvedic texts, thousands of years ago, they said it's easy to digest. And also they said that goat's milk is something which is good in those individuals who have a tendency towards diarrhea. In the sense, because it doesn't upset the gastrointestinal tract much, perhaps it is not going to upset the bowel movements. Often you will know that when milk is not agreeing with you, what happens is you have a milky drink, and then in about a few minutes, sometimes, you know, immediately, or sometimes maybe about an hour later, you feel the urge to go to the toilet, and then there can be diarrhea or loose watery stools. So that's when you know that you are not digesting milk very well. Whereas with goat's milk, it is not the case. It's easy to digest and it relieves even diarrhea. And interestingly, the Ayurvedic view about milk is that because in general it is not easy to digest, to boil the milk. To be honest, I never was able to understand how anybody can drink cold milk straight from the can. you know, taking it out of the refrigerator and just, you know, kind of downing it, the throat. And many times, you know, when I saw my gym buddies who would just like kind of, when they are in the bodybuilding phase, want to have more calories, they want to have more proteins, and one of the cheaper versions instead of expensive protein powders would be just milk. So they would just kind of have half a liter of milk straight after a strong workout, let's say on a leg day. And then they would have this cold milk. And I still see some young people particularly, they just carry this cold milk, a can of cold milk on train, and then they keep sipping it from time to time. But I was not used to drinking milk straight from the can. One is maybe because it's already pasteurized that one might think it's not necessary to boil it. But from an Ayurvedic perspective, it's not just for pasteurization. It is also to make milk less allergenic to digest it. And then I had to really look at, is there any evidence by increasing the temperature of milk or boiling it and giving it to people, can we expect less allergic reactions to milk? And I found a research paper. I found actually a few research papers which show that when milk is boiled and then it is administered to children, of course, in reasonably small quantities, that they did not have the same digestive issues that they would have had if they drank cold milk. So this is just, you know, another kind of suggestion or tip for you. If you don't truly have a milk intolerance and you like milk and you're not dairy free, then why not actually get into the habit of boiling milk? And you know, boiling milk actually makes milk also nice. And what I would suggest is, please do not go for skimmed milk or where the fat has been taken out. In fact, the moment fat is taken out of any food, then you are denaturing the food. It's gone through a lot of processing. So why have skim milk when you can actually boil whole milk, and then you can scoop up the fat that floats at the top? You know, when you boil the milk, it starts to boil, and then you can see this layer of fat that comes up, and then you can scoop it off, and then you can drink the rest of the milk. But usually what I do is I do like whole fat milk. I do not personally drink milk. I gave up drinking milk several years ago. But when I used to drink milk in my 20s, when I used to not have other protein alternatives because I was working out, I must admit I had about half a liter of milk every day. But then what I would do is I would boil the milk and then I would mix it back, you know, the fat, and then have the whole milk. The other way really to make your milk much more digestible is, why don't you just grate some ginger juice, you know, like fresh ginger into your milk. It really becomes delicious and it's easier to digest. And a very common tradition in India is never to have milk on its own, to dilute the milk. So you take about a half a quantity of milk and another half quantity of water, and then you dilute the milk with water, and then you boil it, and then to that you can even add like quarter or half a teaspoon of turmeric. And then this turmeric milk, of course, you know, this has become very popular nowadays. Like many bloggers and Instagram and social media influencers, they always are kind of, you know, kind of displaying the golden milk or the golden liquid because of how you can actually use turmeric and make it into a drink. But it's a common tradition in India that mothers, they would, without thinking hard, they would dilute the milk with water and add a little bit of turmeric and boil it and give it to their children. But that's also one of the ways how you can reduce the allergic tendencies towards milk. And in fact, in the Ayurvedic textbooks, which we are talking about thousands of years ago, they say that uncooked milk can clog the channels or the pathways or systems in our body. And the clogging of the pathways or systems, in the sense, it can cause a little bit of a physiological obstruction, not literal obstruction, but it can possibly kind of result in producing inflammation. And also in the ancient textbooks of Ayurveda, they say that excessive cooking of milk also makes it indigestible. I suppose, you know, if you're reheating it all the time, that also kind of takes away the nutrients from it. So it is interesting that, you know, in the ancient textbooks of Ayurveda, they've not just looked at milk as an amazing food. Yes, it is a very important food, but they have discussed the pros and cons, how to make it digestible, which is more easily digestible. And if it is not digestible, how do you make it digestible? So making food, milk digestible is one of the things that we should be considering if you're truly not milk intolerant or lactose intolerant. But often I have also noticed that in my practice, including myself, because I'm slightly gluten intolerant, because I avoid gluten, if I'm gluten intolerant, it is likely that I won't necessarily also digest milk very easily. So I've noticed that if at all, for some reason, if I have milk and gluten together, there definitely will be bloating. This might be your experience too. Therefore, it's very important to separate out gluten and milk if you are having any intolerances. Secondly, generally, if you are milk intolerant, I would say it is worthy to actually give up gluten too. If you're more gluten free and dairy free, then you are able to reduce possible inflammation in your system. So I'm going to be talking more about milk and lactose intolerance in a while, but let's look at what Ayurvedic texts say about milk products. Obviously, at those times, the milk products were really yogurt, buttermilk, cream, and hung yogurt, and butter, and then ghee. So let's look at yogurt, because, you know, yogurts at some stage in our recent history, let's say in the 1990s, they became health foods, almost like today what we see spirulina as superfood, or chia seeds, or even flax seeds as superfoods. In the 1990s, clearly, all the supermarkets, they started to bring out so many different varieties of yogurts. I mean, in fact, yogurt with fruit, with blueberry, with raspberry, with different kinds of, and even today, you can go to the yogurt section, you have all these fruity yogurts. Are they really healthy? I would say no. Because if you want to have fruit, have fresh fruit by itself, quite separately from yogurt, quite separately from your meals, and you want to have yogurt on its own. But occasionally you want to treat yourself to a dessert, then have a blueberry yogurt. But never think that having blueberry yogurt or strawberry yogurt, you actually are eating something healthy. One, it's full of sugar. High fructose content in these fruity yogurts. And then yogurt itself has its own sugars. You know, sometimes there are added sugars also to make them tasty. And this, if you're starting your day with it, or if you're having it as a snack, obviously, it is not a very healthy choice. So it is very important that you don't think that because there is a health label on these yogurts that you're going to make that you are healthy snack. I mean, in fact, snacking is not healthy. Let's be honest about it. We need two proper meals or three proper meals if we are not, you know, frail and sick or in, you know, very old age, or we have other health conditions. Why do we need to be eating so many different times? Unless you are so physically active, that your work is so physically demanding, that you need this kind of energy. So I would be careful when it comes to the choice of yogurts which are sold as healthy. Whereas if you do make yogurt at home, or if you do buy a good Greek set whole fat yogurt, of course, do enjoy it. You know, it's much better than having two scoops of ice cream, because yogurt, when it is well set, it has a very nice consistency and can be very, very satisfying. I mean, in fact, one of my favorite would be adding some mixed nuts to yogurt and then having it. And, you know, sometimes you can also add fresh blueberries. What I'm saying is, instead of buying a pre-prepared blueberry and strawberry yogurt, why don't you actually have yogurt along with fresh blueberries? Because blueberries, they have lots of antioxidants, so are strawberries when they're in season. And then you can have them as a nice dessert. In fact, you know, if you add a little bit of blueberries to good yogurt, and then maybe a few dark chocolate cacao nibs, you know, which are 100%, and then you grate a little bit of, let's say, cinnamon. I mean, I say grate because if you have a cinnamon stick, you can just kind of nicely grate it, or cinnamon powder, sprinkle some cinnamon powder or cardamom powder. It becomes a fantastic dessert, and then it kind of satisfies your sweet cravings. Yogurt in Ayurvedic textbooks, particularly they say that it should not be eaten on a daily basis. And that's because Ayurvedic classical textbooks and in Ayurvedic tradition, they think that yogurt again clogs our physiological systems. In Sanskrit, these channels or systems are called shrotas. And that means it can result in inflammation because they are heavy to digest. And also not to have it at nighttime. And I always wonder why. Perhaps, you know, if you have it too closer to your sleep, it's heavy to digest, it's very cooling, that it may affect your sleep. I mean, I haven't tried having yogurt at night for any length of period to test this, but maybe if you have this experience, maybe try and recognize this and change this. And also, I would say making yogurt at home can be fun, and it's not difficult. Even in cold countries like the UK, of course, now we are in summer, it's quite warm. Sometimes you really need a fan to get by the day in London nowadays. But even during cold months like winter, you can make yogurt at home. And I'll share a foolproof recipe of how to make yogurt. If you are somebody who enjoys yogurt, is basically you would need a culture. So a culture is like just about a tablespoon of whole set yogurt. And you know, once you have this whole set yogurt culture, you make your own yogurt. Your own yogurt then becomes the culture, and you can give it to someone else, or you can continue to use it, because you need that live bacteria for it to ferment. So you take about a tablespoon of natural set whole fat yogurt. And, okay, you don't do anything with it now, but get a whole fat milk. And what you're going to do is you're going to boil this milk. Let's say about a liter of it. And when you are boiling the milk, this is where the trick is how slowly you boil the milk. The temperature has to be really low, low to medium, almost like you're standing there kind of waiting, when would this boil? Because, you know, if you have the experience of boiling milk, you know that it can be so precarious. You just kind of have put it on the stove and you just turn somewhere and already it's boiled and boiled over. So that's how milk can boil very quickly, because the temperature raises very quickly. Whereas to make yogurt, you need to be so very slow. So you boil the milk so slowly, and then I generally would use a spoon to stir so that the temperature is not raising too quickly. And then once this is like lukewarm, like, and then it becomes warm, and then it slowly starts to boil over about 10 to 15, sometimes even 20 minutes, depends on how much patience you have. And how much you are particular about getting a good yogurt, homemade yogurt. And then what you do is, once it is boiled, then you let it cool down. And importantly, it should not cool down to room temperature. It should just be lukewarm. And the best way to test is use your clean little finger. So when you dip your clean little finger, if it is lukewarm, that's the perfect temperature. And to this, you are going to add your a tablespoon of yogurt as culture. And now you're going to close the lid of the saucepan, and then you're going to wrap it in towels. Or sometimes I even use a duvet to wrap it so that it's really warm. Sometimes I even bring my old woolen jackets and then cardigan and then wrap it. And then that's then nicely carried and put it. You put it in your hot water cupboard, or or in your storeroom where you know that it is dark and it is warmer. You leave it there overnight, and the next day morning you come back, and then you gently unwrap your yogurt like you're gift unwrapping, and then you open the lid, you can see this nicely set yogurt. And this is healthy. It's homemade. You have done it. You can be sure what's gone into it. This, you can use it. Also, now save a little bit of it at the end. So that becomes the culture for your next set of yogurt.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
I gave up drinking cow's milk or any type of dairy milk long time ago. And that was because I was noticing digestive issues and intolerances. But obviously, there are lots of debates about why it is actually good to avoid milk. In fact, there are 6 good reasons to avoid milk. Number 1, lactose intolerance. I'll talk about lactose intolerance in a second because it's an important factor for one to understand. Secondly, it has lots of saturated fat. Thirdly, it gives you extra calories. Unless you are very athletic and you are very active, you may not need it. Fourthly, it also has unneeded hormones, especially if you're thinking about commercially available milk, then these cows or these animals are fed with hormones so that they can produce more milk. obviously those hormones would get into our system. Not only that, they are treated with antibiotics. And obviously, an antibiotic-treated, hormone-treated milk, when you consume it, you are not going to be immune to those antibiotics and hormones. It is going to affect your system. And in fact, antibiotic resistance is because of these commercially farmed dairy and also animal products. And fifth reason is there's also in man, there is evidence that there is increased risk of prostate cancer. So do not think that, you know, you can be drinking milk all your life, especially as a man, day in and day out for 60 years. You might have a little risk towards developing prostate cancer. And the sixth reason is there is also an increased risk of ovarian cancer. I mean, this is in women. So because of the risk for certain specific types of cancer and the way how it is commercially produced, generally, you know, milk is not such a good drink to really think that it's always very healthy. And what about lactose intolerance? So because milk is a nutrient-rich liquid and it is produced by mammals, you know, not just humans are also mammals, but other mammals to feed their infants, before they're able to digest and use other foods as sources of nutrition, obviously. So mammals, they do need milk or their mother's milk in order to grow, because our digestive system will not be capable of digesting any other form of food until a certain time. And in fact, every mammal, including humans, they produce an enzyme called lactase, which digests the sugar which is found in milk. And the sugar found in milk is lactose. In order to digest this lactose, we need an enzyme called lactase. And lactase is primarily produced in infancy, as mother's milk is primarily the source of nutrition. And the levels of lactase, they decline with age. As the child learns to digest and absorb nutrients from other foods alongside milk. So the reason that as we grow, we start to have a decline in the availability or production of this enzyme lactase, obviously a lactose-containing milk would cause some disturbances in some children. In fact, weaning an individual from breastfeeding at appropriate age is very important to facilitate the body to produce the required amount of enzymes. If weaning is not done properly or appropriately in humans, that also can later result in lactose intolerance. It's actually interesting to note that there are not any lactase persistent animals in the world. Even cats and cows who feed on milk when they are infants cannot digest the same milk in adulthood. And continuing to feed on milk of other animals is a practice that's learned and followed by humans since many centuries across different parts of the world. And this practice, which probably some would say was unnecessary, has resulted in lactase persistent adulthood due to mutations in the DNA that regulate the activity of lactase gene. So this is how we have ended up with higher amounts of lactase, or not amounts, higher prevalence of lactase intolerance that we are seeing in our modern day society. I mean, in fact, it is also proved that one of the most biologically active peptides derived from milk which are beta casomorphins, has the ability to permeate intestinal barrier and induce biological effects, though, or like opioid receptors in the immune system and nervous system. So these effects are very much evident in children with pervasive development disorders, including autism, Asperger's, and pervasive developmental disorders, not kind of classified elsewhere also. So some of these effects, they are mediated through the milk peptides, including gastrointestinal hypersensitivities, like food intolerances, and exacerbations of tantrums, screaming, aggression, hyperactivity, inattention to tasks, and pain. So if you do notice any of these kind of behavioral changes in your children, it would be important to think, is it because of the milk that you may have been giving your children? And according to the opioid excess hypothesis of autism particularly, so exogenous opioid peptides, which are released during digestion of a protein in milk called casein, and gluten, in fact, along with that, can in fact contribute to the development of these developmental disorders. That's why, like in the earlier part of the show, I was kind of saying that if you are lactose intolerant, you perhaps are also going to be gluten intolerant, or you have to be careful about gluten. It's better to be gluten-free and dairy-free because of this phenomena of how there can be an opioid-like effect which can be seen that would result in behavioral disorders or disorders linked to growth. In fact, milk-derived peptides can lead to the development of leaky gut, which is a permeable gut which results in dysbiosis. It can result in food intolerances. And that increased permeability of blood-brain barrier causing interference with the neurotransmitter functions in the central nervous system. So a low-grade inflammation in the body, especially a low-grade inflammation in the brain, irritability, impaired social interaction, and other behavioral issues. So you can see how, in fact, if a child is intolerant to milk, it can affect the brain functions as well, not just the digestive function. So the relationship between brain and gut axis is very important for us to understand. And in fact, in many studies, a gluten-free or casein-free diet, it has resulted in significant improvement in the quality of life and symptoms of most developmental disorders. I do see that, you know, in my practice, whenever there are behavioral changes in children, there's any possible autism or ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity, then the moment I ask them to become gluten-free and dairy-free, over a period of time, they start to notice huge changes in their digestion, in their absorption, in their behavior, in their ability to focus, in their ability to be more interested in their environment and other people. So it's quite interesting how what we assume as so harmless as milk can have such a strong negative impact in certain children and certain individuals when they have these intolerances. In fact, besides these, if one is, you know, milk intolerant, then they can experience flatulence, pain, and loose stools, and other digestive issues during digestion of these lactose-containing foods. And also when you are digesting lactose-containing food, if you are intolerant, then you can have this crankiness and irritability change in your mood too. And these symptoms are especially evident in children because they can't verbalize what they're experiencing. So it kind of manifests as behavioral changes in them. Too much lactose can also lead to weight gain, which may not be healthy all the time. So the extra calories that we get because of lactose, it's a kind of sugar, therefore we get extra calories. And as lactose is a sugar, it can cause an increase in fat stores and not contribute always to increase in lean muscle mass. Therefore, you know, it can result in excessive fat accumulation. And, you know, sometimes some parents, they fail to understand this and they consider that the weight gain due to dairy consumption is a measure of health and well-being of the baby because they look nice and chubby. But on the other hand, it could be causing problems to their health. Dairy products are one of the factors for intestinal candida overgrowth. The proteins and sugars in dairy are liked by the yeast colonies, and they can lead to extensive candida growth and fungal growth. Candida albicans is a very common problem, not just amongst children, but also amongst adults. When you start to notice this excess fatigue, poor digestion, bloating all the time, sometimes even, you know, inability to pay attention. And usually when this is long term, it results in a low grade inflammation. And low grade inflammation can result in many chronic illnesses. And of course, in children, it would result in nutritional deficiencies or even poor weight gain when there is candida. And this is very much can be related to milk. In fact, not just milk, dairy products. See, dairy products, they contain hormones that have potential to disrupt the physiological functions of our hormonal system or endocrine system, which can alter the growth, development, and functioning of even our vital organs. See, some of them, they include estrogens, progesterone, corticoids, androgens, insulin-like growth factor, what we call IGF-1, and prostaglandins. And these hormones, they gain entry to milk through diffusion. And these hormones are present in the milk of all animals, including cow, goat, and camel, and they all can pose the same risk due to chronic intake of these milks in an individual. So it's also important thing to note that oxytocin injections are given to milk cattle so that they feel less anxious. And when this is consumed by children, they can pose adverse health consequences. So I was saying previously in this talk that it's this farming practices of milk that actually has contributed to a lot of health issues. It's not just, we can't just blame the pure cow's milk or goat's milk, but it's the farming practices. And considering all of these factors, you know, it's better to eliminate dairy and its products from the diet should you have these symptoms and to have more fiber-rich, more lean protein or plant-based proteins to establish a healthy gut and then to reduce inflammation. And especially if you are talking about children, this becomes very important that parents pay attention to taking off their children from milk or dairy products for a certain period of time. See, if there is a true allergy, which is very rarely found for milk, it would be an IgE allergy. At least I haven't come across it in my practice. But there can be IgG allergy, which are late onset allergies. And these late onset allergies, they are usually allergies which are produced, let's say, a few hours after consuming milk a few days after consuming milk. And when, and they're dose dependent in the sense how frequently. For instance, you know, if I'm going to have, let's say, about half a cup of cow's milk with half a cup of water, I'm going to dilute it. I'm going to boil it and add a little bit of ginger, fresh ginger and some turmeric, and I'm going to consume it. I may actually not have any IgG allergy. However, if I'm drinking cold milk in excess quantities on a daily basis, then if I do have a tendency for late onset allergy, then these symptoms will start to occur and your immune system will also start to produce these allergic responses. But the trick with mild allergy or mild late onset intolerance, I should say, is that rotate it. So if you're truly not intolerant to milk, then what you can do, and you like milk, let's say you get good source of milk, A2 milk, have it like half a cup and don't have it for a couple of days. I always go by this theory of 1 day on, 2 days off, because then you are allowing your gut to forgive, to metabolize, to completely get rid of the possible adverse effects. And then when you reintroduce it, then your body won't react in the same way. But if there's truly, you know, milk intolerance in somebody who was drinking milk and was quite all right, then take them off dairy for about a couple of months and then build their gut. See a good practitioner, see a good Ayurvedic practitioner or a functional health practitioner or a nutritionist, and they'll give you good ideas actually while you have eliminated dairy, what you should be doing to in order to help bring the inflammation down, to rebuild the gut, and then later you can reintroduce it in, of course, small reasonable quantities. So what I'm saying is, you know, there are no absolutely good foods, absolutely bad foods. We need to understand the nature of foods. We need to understand our own nature, our own ability to digest, and our own food intolerances, and then modify them accordingly to get the benefits, but not to be affected by the adverse effects of the non-beneficial effects of all foods. So one person's food can be another person's poison. So there is no such strict rule that everybody should be dairy free, everybody should be gluten free. But when you consider all of these factors, you will know whether becoming dairy free or gluten free is the right choice for you, for your health. So I will continue to share the wisdom of Ayurveda and how we can apply that into our modern day lifestyles. And do stay tuned to Are You Well? And I'm looking forward to catching up with all of you next week. Thank you. Sarve bhavantu sukhinaha.